people have just been asking for permission to go to other committees and so on. But the important thing is everything is on record and they can read. So we should be able to proceed, and you are most welcome with your team. We appreciate your response to our invitation. Honourable members, can we proceed? Because I can see you are doing what I've been doing. You are busy with your cell phone. Okay, send your last messages and then let's start.
Mr. Chairman, on behalf of the team here and the SMU, we express our deep honour at being asked to address this August committee. We have, to assist you, Mr. Chairman, presented you with a summary of what we intend to present today. Before I do that, Mr. Chairman, may I introduce to you the members of the team here? I'll introduce them from the extreme right. That's Mr. Jerome Wells, who's sitting at the far end. He is our corporate lawyer. And then we've got the head of business support, Ms. Miseria Nyaki. We've got Mr. Kera Hisaki, who is the corporate legal counsel at the SIU. Then we've got Mr. Leonard Ekoto, who is the program director, and Mpombi Motobeli, who is the CFO, and Chris Quant, who is the head of the PMO, that's the project management office at the SIU. Mr. Chairman, there are three major issues that we wish to cover, four major issues. The first one is our investigations, which will include our performance over the over the financial year and the key investigations that we're involved in or have been involved in, the position in the human resources section at the SIU, then the financials, and then the key operational challenges. Mr. Chairman, we have presented a series of slides. I'm afraid it's not available to you, but it is what is in front of you in touch. Mr. Chairman, in regards to our performance, we wish to point out that in the period 2013-2014, that's the financial year, there were 7 new proclamations that were issued, and we submitted 30 presidential reports from previous investigations. Chairman, as far as the outcomes of our investigations go, we had set ourselves 9 targets. We exceeded 6 of the 9 as detailed in pages 7 and 8 of our annual report. And what we achieved is set out on slide number 3, which sets out the details. These are, in a way, just setting out what we had intended to achieve. Mr. Chairman, let me point out in regard to the 3 that were not achieved. When I was here earlier this year, I think around May, Mr. Chairman, I indicated to the committee that we had changed the manner in which we operate. We are now more outcomes-driven. The targets that had the 9 targets relate to... The 9 targets, Mr. Chairman, relate to how we used to operate previously. The six targets that we achieved are matters that we still regard as proper targets for us to achieve. The three we regard as outdated in the sense that it doesn't fit in with the nature of our investigation. Similarly, give an example. One of the longer investigations that we've been involved in is the investigations into the pensions fraud. This is where people were claiming pensions they were not entitled to them. Because it was an investigation that had endured for about 5 years, what had happened is we had regarded that as a target. That's no longer possible because that investigation is now at an end. And we don't regard, for example, the nature of the savings that we refer to there to be something we should be striving towards. So our new set of targets are contained in the financial planning that we will be presenting to you in due course, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, as far as the key investigations go, we've listed them on slides 4, 5, 6, and 7. I could just briefly allude to them. The one that obviously comes out first in this, just because we've just finished it, is the Inconjure investigation, Mr. Chairman, and we set out there what we've achieved insofar as that investigation goes. The next one, Mr. Chairman, is the so-called SOSA investigation. This is the Universal Service and Access Agency of South Africa. In essence, Mr. Chairman, there's not much we can say except that the matter is in court at the moment, and unfortunately, while I recall when I was here in May, I said it would be in court quite soon, the CEO, the person who was appointed the CEO, has taken a number of technical points, and as a result, the matter has not yet been finalized in court, but it is in the High Court, and we're hoping for a court stay quite soon. The third major investigation is the Media Corner investigation, and this has set aside a contract for 756 million rand entered into by the Department of Communications. Mr. Chairman, our role in this matter is quite interesting, and it indicates that we have to be quite creative about how we go about doing our task. The person who was awarded the contract attempted to get this matter into arbitration on the basis that the contract itself had an arbitration clause. What we did was we assisted the department, and we wanted the applicants in the matter, to have the matter, to have the contract declared invalid and thereby set aside the arbitration clause and have the High Court rule on the validity of the contract rather than the amounts that are in issue. Mr. Chairman, the next matter that we deal with is the Gauteng Health Department matter. This is a long-running matter, but again, Mr. Chairman, the SIU can be useful as shown in this matter. You'll recall, Mr. Chairman, that the 3P, who was the winning tenderer, had claimed 1.3 billion rand, and both the High Court and Supreme Court appeal said that they were entitled to what they proved. What we managed to do, Mr. Chairman, is to show that all the transactions were tainted with fraud, and effectively they were entitled to nothing. There is now a court order saying that they withdraw their claims against the Department of Health. Chairman, those are the key investigations. There are 10 further matters where we have evidence which we believe could allow us to bring proceedings in the High Court. We don't want to say more than that at this stage, and I'm sure that our next appearance before you will be in a position to give you those details. But the amounts involved are quite substantial if one takes the total the total of all 10 of those matters. Stephen, with that, may I then go to the next issue that I want to address, namely human resources. We have a staff complement at the 1st of April, and that's more or less where we are at the moment, Mr. Chairman, of 564. The details of this are contained at pages 32 onwards of the annual report. Of the 564 that were engaged by the SIU on 1st of April, 445 are operational staff and 119 non-operational staff. Operational staff meaning those directly involved at some level or the other with the investigations to the SIU. Mr. Chairman, in the last financial year, 23 staff members left and 10 new appointments were made. You see, Mr. Chairman, there's a relative stability relating to the people who work for the SIU. Chairman, we may also say at this point that the numbers we refer to are those who are appointed permanently by the SIU. But we do require the services of different specialists like, for example, quantity surveyors, architects, security experts and engineers, and those we engage as and when we need them. One group of people whom there is going to be a need, and we just need to work out how many we need and at what level they should be, is forensic lawyers to direct the investigations we do now that we are outcomes-based. Simon, I recall when I was here in May, I indicated that we had a number of people on contract who are practicing either at the bar or the sidebar, and they've come to the SIU for various periods. Some of them have renewed their contracts, and since I was last here, others have come on board. At present, we have 14 lawyers who are assisting the 15 lawyers permanently employed by the SIU, and Mr. Jerome Wells is the corporate lawyer that I have been talking about. Simon, the next matter that I'd like to deal with are the financial results, and this appears, Chairman, in slide 8, and it's pretty routine work, except that what you will notice, Mr. Chairman, that the income for the 2 years has not changed substantially. Last year we had an income of about 490, in the previous financial year, 497 million, and now it's about 503 million. Our expenditure has quite surprisingly dropped somewhat, and we explain, Mr. Chairman, in footnote 3 that the use of consultants by the SIU has been, we've put a complete stop to the process, and through that, Mr. Chairman, we've reduced our expenses by more than 41 million rand. I'm going to deal with the use of consultants again when I deal with the challenges. Okay. Simon, as far as the expenditure and the amounts we budgeted for, that is dealt with in slide 9, Simon, and you will see there that the budget that we have is 503 million. The amount we budgeted for was 448 million, and the actual budget is 503 million. Chairman, in regards to our expenditure, you will see that employee costs are the highest there, and that's not surprisingly because we're a service organization. We don't provide anything but the human resources that we put into our investigations. Of course, our administrative costs are quite high as well, but that's on account of the fact that we exist in 8 of the provinces. But the figures are there, Mr. May I make one point, and this will be a point I will turn to again. You will see there, Mr. Chairman, notwithstanding the point I made about consultants, that our consultants' bill is still high at 5 million rand. The point I want to make on that, Mr. Chairman, most of that is taken up with this loose agency called the Anti-Corruption Task Team. That is made up of officials of Hawks, the SIU, and the AFU. And what they do is they work together in a team so that if there is, especially criminal matters, they would be able to finalize their matters sooner. Unfortunately, the expenditure for the ACTT comes mainly from the SIU budget. And so when these figures appear, Mr. Chairman, that is on the basis that we have no control over the appointment of those persons. And so I don't want it to be said that what you said to us, you are reducing the number of consultants, but it is a pretty high bill, and that we said. And it's a point we will be taking up with the ACTT so that it doesn't reflect negatively on the SIU itself. Mr. Chairman, may I then turn to the next issue, and this is the matters relating to the first two quarters of this year. Sim, your invitation to us said we should deal with the previous financial year and also the first two quarters, and these figures are just again intended to indicate to you that this is where we are. But these figures in many ways are somewhat misleading, because what you would see, Mr. Chairman, that we have a budget for those two parts of 255 million rand, and we've only spent 187. And that's because our investigations don't allow us to say, for this month, this is what we are doing. Sometimes our expenses come in at more or less the same time. In this case, I suspect that figure will be closer to about 300 million rand when we come back to the figure for this year, out of the third and fourth quarters, in regards to our income. And the same applies, Mr. Chin, with the expenditure. But we thought we would just indicate to the committee where we are or where we've been in the last 6 months. Chairman, then we deal with the Auditor General's report, and you will see, Mr. Chairman, we very pleased point out that our report is unqualified. The Auditor General obviously did emphasize one matter, and that unfortunately is a matter, Mr. Chairman, that appears at page 39 of the report, note 8, and page 71, paragraph 32 of the annual report, of our annual report, and it is a matter dealing with mistakes made in prior years, but they seem to keep carrying that forward. Mr. Chairman, we're not oblivious to the matters raised by the Auditor General, and steps are being taken to address them as the matters raised. Mr. Chairman, among the matters he has raised are those dealing with issues that are covered by Section 55(2)(b)(1) of the PFMA, and in this case it is irregular expenditure. And Mr. Chairman, you will see that for that financial year the amount of irregular expenditure is 14.29 million rand. Now, Mr. Chairman, let me emphasize that I'm not suggesting for one moment that irregular expenditure is regular. I accept that it is irregular, and mechanisms must be put in place to ensure complete compliance with the PFMA. But having said that, Mr. Chairman, it is my duty to emphasize that this is irregular expense as opposed to fruitless and wasteful expenditure or unauthorized expenditure. And a large chunk of that, Mr. Chairman, you'll see in the first figure quoted, 4.72 million rands, Chairman, is an ATT matter. The other is travel and accommodation. Quite ironically, Mr. Chairman, what happened here was that a travel agent who had not been, whose services were not procured through the proper SEF processes was in use, but quite ironically that travel agent has provided its services at cheaper rate than the travel agent which we had been using, but whose contract was simply being renewed on the basis that no SEM process had taken place in between. So it is more a question of non-compliance with process and procedure than losses for the SIU for the state. And none of that 14.29 million, Mr. Chairman, constitutes any loss for the SIU or for the state. Mr. Chairman, finally, let me deal with the operational challenges that we face. Now, Mr. Chairman, in terms of Section 5.1b of the SIU Act, the SIU is entitled to charge departments or state institutions whom it investigates for the investigation. That's what the Act provides. Now, a number of institutions are saying, well, you've provided us with a bill of 10 million or 20 million, but we haven't budgeted for this, and we can't pay. Now, Mr. Chairman, in terms of our constitutional dispensation, that simply is unacceptable. The access we can charge them for. We have at present engaged with the Office of the Auditor General to find a mechanism whereby they would be required to pay, so that we become less dependent on us. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, that long-term, perhaps medium-term, the goal is to make the SIU entirely dependent on what it can recover from state institutions when it is investigated. But that's one of the challenges. It is not a challenge that this committee can assist with this day, but it may be that we will have to bring this to the committee if, for example, there is a breakdown in our talks with the Auditor General on this issue. Chairman, the second issue, and this is an matter I confess was raised with me the last time I was here, namely that our investigations take too long to complete. And Mr. Chairman, I'm not here to say that observation is not an accurate observation. We have to speed up the processes. We have to finalize our investigations, and it can be done. Unfortunately, Mr. Chairman, historically what has happened is we've had to investigate matters that lend themselves to long-term investigations rather than focused investigations. Like, for example, the SOSA investigation or the land reform investigations. And I should just place on record, Mr. Chairman, that in regard to land reform, the Minister Nkwiti has said to me that, you know, we must have a mechanism whereby we know precisely what you're investigating. And that observation is an observation I made a long time ago. So that critique of the SRU, we hope, will gradually be less and less forceful, because our investigations are now more focused. I just need to say one more thing, Mr. Chairman, and again, it is not to explain, but rather to, well, it is more to explain than to find excuses for the long investigation. Our investigations are unlike what most other investigations involve. If, for example, the police were investigating a matter, and some matters that come to us could go to the police. All they would need, all that they would do is investigate, draw up a docket, and give to the public prosecutor. Ours is very different. We investigate, we are required to write a report for the president, and that does take down, we take pride in the reports we produce. In addition, Mr. Chairman, we produce dockets that are sent, like police send dockets, we produce dockets that are sent to the public prosecutor, and we hope of the same quality, or even a better quality than the police would send in similar types of investigation. Then we then have disciplinary dockets to send to the Director General. More importantly, Mr. Chairman, our officials are then involved as witnesses in these matters. I can just say as a matter of fact that our officials are frequently traveling to Durban so that they can be witnesses at the disciplinary hearings that are taking place. And in DPW, those officials involved in the council of them. So that, Mr. Chairman, is where we are in terms of time. And when the observations are made, we hope that those extra bits that we are required to do are taken into account. Mr. Chairman, you recall I was talking earlier about the special skills that we need. Again, and I know that I shouldn't be repetitive, but we need to emphasize, Mr. Chairman, that the work of the SIU is changing quite drastically. We are now more outcomes-based. Previously, our investigations were purely for the purposes of producing reports. Now it is to produce legal outcomes. I've indicated already that we have 15 lawyers working for us on a full-time basis. That has to increase quite dramatically. What that number should be, what the ID number should be, and at what level they are, is a matter that we are trying to work out. And it is for that reason that we have this process whereby we've asked lawyers from the bar to be with us on contact for 4 months, 2 months, 6 months, so. But by the end of next year, we hope to have finalized both the numbers and the appointments of such lawyers. I need to say this, that it's not easy to get the experienced lawyers that we need. We need people who are going to be able, when they look at a matter, to say, these are the issues. It will take us 3 months to finalize that. We need the following documents. We need the following witnesses and so on. But that's my main challenge, and it's a challenge I'm hoping I will be able to meet by the time I come here this time next year. Soon, I don't have anything else to say. I'm sure these the members of your committee have questions to ask, and thought I'd made sufficient time to bear before.
Of irregular expenditure, I think we as a committee must also note that since the SIUs is one of our prime bodies fighting corruption and serious maladministration, it must be our concern that there is maladministration at the SIU. It's simply that is what irregular expenditure is. And whilst we hear the explanation, we must remind ourselves always that also in terms of the work they are doing, the presence of irregular expenditure may point to, as I said, maladministration, but possibly also to corruption in cases where they are the investigative body. So I think as a committee we should say to them that it is really unacceptable for them not to have a clean audit. But that's, they are welcome to respond to this, but that's by way of comment. She listen, in terms of questions, Advocate Sonia has referred to the issue of targets, and in the past it was an issue also raised by the AG, and this year there's no finding on targets, and he has said that in their financial plan, if I recall correctly, there's now a new target. My question is simply whether that possibly by way of preempting future audit processes was also discussed and maybe received the go-ahead by the AG in terms of targets, because it seems to be an elusive type of for the SIU to finally pin down realistic targets. And in addition to that, say, maybe that leads to the issue of targets, but there's also the issue of outcomes. It would be nice to, in this fight against corruption, to hear more about the outcome of specifically civil litigation that's undertaken on behalf of the state. And then lastly, in terms of the Precision Conduct Project, as it's called by the SIU, I would like to inquire from Advocate Sony whether it's contemplated at any stage, and if not, possibly why not, that there must also be a civil litigation against the property owner based on what we in the law call unjust enrichment. Because that is an important part of our common law in terms of private law and civil litigation. And I think the one thing that is in all of the discourse and investigations common cause is that there was benefits. So to the property owner, so I would like to know from them in terms of their investigation whether they made a determination whether they see this unjust, and if so, why they did not follow the civil route available to them to claim that from the property owner. Thank you.
I am not sure I understand you. You say unjust enrichment to the property owner. Where was that claim made? In which court?
No, Chair, that's specifically my question. You will remember that this report of the SIU also, to the best of my knowledge, made finding of benefit on the part of the property owner. From benefit, it will bring into question whether there was unjust enrichment. To my mind, as part of the investigation, it should have been entertained, investigated, and a finding should have been made, which I didn't read about in the report. So that's why I asked the question. I do not say that there was a finding of unjust enrichment. I say that it should have come into play during the investigation.
Don't you believe that we should leave that matter to another committee of parliament that is dealing with it?
Well, Chair, no, because specifically within the ambit of the SIU and the power they have in terms of the Act which governs their activities and investigations, it empowers them to, by way of civil litigation, claim whatever they can on behalf of the state.
If we agree that there's no report that has made any finding that is an undue enrichment, why do you put that question? Is it a fair question?
The reason I would say, of course, that should have been, if it was not, then we should have an explanation as to why it was not investigated.
Chairman, may I be given leave to read, because there seems to be a misunderstanding of what the findings of the SIU are. Now, Chairman, ordinarily when a report is written, the report must speak for itself. When the investigating team compiled this report, they were very aware of all the issues that were raised. And they make the point that if I could just read, Mr. Chairman, from paragraph 7 of our report on page 231. It says, what our investigations reveal, and we must record that all the important and relevant evidence that we have gathered has concisely been set out above, may be briefly summarized as follows. Through decisions formally but unlawfully and wrongfully taken by the DPW, Makania, that's the private architect that the department appointed, were placed in virtual control of the upgrading process. And then we go on, Mr. Chairman, that as a result of such action on his part, the cost of the project soared from the initial estimate of 27 million rand to 260. We contend that in conducting himself thus, Makania acted in breach of his contract. As a result, the DPW suffered damages or losses totaling 155 million rand. It is clear from the particulars of claim, the report states at paragraph 8, page 232, that as a result of Makania's actions, many people were enriched. In claim C, for example, we set out how some of the consultants and contractors were enriched. It is also implicit from the claims based on the increase in the scope of works that the value of the president or the Zuma family's residential complex was enhanced. Clearly, to the extent that these claims are well-founded, the president or his family is rich. Be the foregoing as it may, paragraph 9, it is clear that the DPW suffered massive losses or damages. These needed to be recovered. The choice that the SIU faced was this. It could institute separate claims against each of the persons or entities that were enriched, in which case it would largely rely on the principles of unjust enrichment. Alternatively, it could claim the full extent of its damage or losses from the person who is directly responsible for causing them, namely Makania. After consulting our lawyers, we chose the latter option. Among the considerations that we took into account were the following. The institution of separate claims would be a complicated matter and would raise questions of joinder and eventually consolidation. In any case, individual claims on the beneficiaries of Makania's breaches would not entitle us to claim the full amount of the losses that we suffered. In each case, our claim would be restricted to simply the extent of the enrichment, which, having regard to the finding of our experts, could in many cases be less than the damages or losses that the DPW suffered. In addition, there are a number of items that would not enable us to claim, for example, the losses that we suffered as a result of the increase in scope of the SAPS and SANDF accommodation and related requirements. Based on, among others, these considerations, we opted for a single claim against the person, say, was responsible for causing the damage or losses. Such a claim, we considered, would be the most effective and efficient means of recouping the maximum for the state. Now, that's all contained in the report. It's not something I'm explaining now, Mr. Chair. Now, we were aware when this report was written that these questions would arise.
Give you an example of what happened to me. When I was appointed chief in 1988, the police came and did an assessment of the security issue. They decided what must be done. And they didn't come to me and say, approve this or that. They said, we have done our security, and then we are going to work on a property, remove anything that can be an obstacle. Suppose they went and inflated the prices and enhanced my property without my consent, without my knowledge. Would that kind of benefit make me like a person. I don't know. I didn't consent to anything. I was not asked. I took it. People are doing everything in the course of their duty, and they end it. Because of their corrupt activities, my property is enhanced, and maybe they enhanced it in order to justify what they want to get out of the whole thing. Now, how do I get involved in that situation?
Mr. Chairman, let me just say that the law funders, trust and enrichment would deal with those matters, and all the evidence is heard, the court will make a decision on them. But for us as the FIU, our main job is to recover losses suffered by the state and the maximum, and we'll explain the actions we take. Mr. Chairman, if somebody believes that a different action should be taken, they're entitled to that belief, but we've been asked to fulfill a statutory mandate, and we've done what we think is right, and we didn't do it on our own. The claims have been lodged by one of the most eminent counsels in our country, Advocate Manette. He drafted the claims, not anybody from the SIU. And all those claims are, as we explained in our report, designed to ensure that the state recovers the maximum amount that, having regard to the losses it has suffered.
No, it doesn't really answer my question, but maybe in follow-up, the SIU can answer two questions, sir. The one is then...
It doesn't answer a question, because that's your opinion, but they have answered the question, but your opinion is that it's not what you wanted. Okay, proceed.
Thank you. In follow-up, in making a judgment in terms of how to proceed, Advocate Sally refers to their duty to recover on behalf of the state that was lost. So I would like to ask the question, how they deem possible in terms of best outcome, that it would be better to go in terms of the civil action after one functionary, whilst the benefit clearly to a large extent lay elsewhere. To my mind, that still does not make sense. And in the second place, I don't know whether I understand correctly whether this is his contention, and if it is so, whether he can explain to me that the option to first pursue the architect, to my mind, does not exclude an action of unjust enrichment against the property owner. The one is not excluding the other, so then the question still must be answered why it was decided only to go after the architect.
I'm not sitting here as a lawyer. Lawyers have something called subject K. I don't know how far that is applicable in our circumstances. Honorable my jacket went for assistance.
Yes, indeed, it's an answer to equity in here, because the matter is still under discussion. Maybe we should try to leave it. We're not going to come to any conclusions here. Let's rather leave all the forums that we see with this matter to conclude on the matter. You're right, subjudicate. So basically, we can just ask points of clarification, but not like give ideas as to how you should actually be going about this matter. We're not about to stop you from what you're doing in terms of really fulfilling the mandate of your office. So basically, for me, I just want to commend you for the plain audit, the unqualified audit, and to actually say that you should continue with the good work that you're doing. One area that I'm a little bit worried about is HR. If we go to page, I think 7. On page 7, you say that when you draft a report, you know, it might be helpful when you during for they come to HR later. This is a operational hub 445. Please segregate the statistics so that we understand who is in processing the office, how many of these positions. Maybe can even indicate the level, can even indicate how many are men and how many are women. You have indicated none of them are staff. We don't have an idea to what they are all about. So you can just indicate a little bit as to what this category of staff is what to do with. And then also with staff 29 living, too many. Can indicate very generally the reasons for living. So we should actually also bring us into your organization so that you understand the environment. You've indicated that the SIU contract in specialist skills, but you haven't indicated the numbers. How many of the political lawyers have you got? How many of the quality surveyors and architects? So it might be a good idea to have answers now just for you to just help us to understand this. But all in all, I think the report is good. What I would actually just want to say about irregular expenditure and some of the comments that you gave me is that, you know, in South Africa we have a tendency of looking at irregular expenditure as it is money that is stolen and is corrupt. See, even now they say that 30, something like in government department, 30 billion rand was for irregular expenditure. My understanding of irregular expenditure is that you did not properly follow supply chain management, the precinct of supply chain management, but the work has been done. If you have procured the goods are there. It does not necessarily mean that the money has been stolen. And we need to actually continue to educate our Africans about it, because I'm sure we start talking about irregular expenditure. What people understand is that in your case, is it 14.3 million? So it means you tell us where you took 14.3 million. Which is not the case. This is not what the auditor general is saying when they actually indicate irregular expenditure. So I think to some extent we still need to educate ourselves as South Africans so that then also there mustn't be this public perception of corruption. Because you know you might actually come to a stage where you find that the way to get people or the papers right is that there is corruption in the SID. And you can imagine if it's corrupted in the office in the special investigation unit. Then you are doomed in the country. But those are my friends, Chair, and I'm just happy with the presentation.
Honorable Horn, I just want to put something on record that I have no intention of suppressing, but I know the rule of natural justice, which says you can't be that in our own house. Now, the SIU produced a report, wrongly or rightly, they followed one of the two options that they had. Now, if you ask them, why didn't you follow that option and not this option, then you are asking them to judge themselves. Why don't we, the matter is before the court, let's leave it there. If they made the wrong choice, another independent forum will deal with that choice. So it is on that basis that I interrupted you, but you can rest assured you are a valuable member of this committee. You always make positive contributions, and I want you to continue that spirit. Honorable Breton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I note that your annual report refers to the development of legal specialists to be used to speed up investigations and also data to assist in prosecuting those guilty criminal offences. Is that what they're going to use for? Are you developing such specialists, and if that is what you're going to use for, how do you envisage that playing out? Just a comment that it would be useful if we list the investigations that are currently underway. You know, you had these proclamations and these have been if you could sort of follow up on the result, if it could be just a judge sort of progress there. So for instance, so we find the appearance amount of majesty in the air, and so how many of these are successful prosecutions, how many were convicted, how many disciplinary actions were instituted, etc., etc. Then you mentioned that a lot of the funding goes to actually teaching issues. How are you involved with the ACTG, is an ongoing involvement, if you envisage the situation at some point where you're going to be a standalone thing, or are you going to incorporate them in your unit eventually? And then, finally, my third issue is the software matter. You mentioned briefly in your presentation regarding the software matter. The criminal matter was referred some time ago, I'm aware. Do you ever inquire about the progress there? Of why on earth is the matter taking so long? It's been there for more than 5 years. It almost seems impossible. I asked the question of the minister that the trial was to end the investigation. Now, honestly, when the interview finishes with the matter, the investigation is not perfect for criminal purposes, I understand that. But a lot of the groundwork has been done. It's unnecessary to redo the entire industry. Why is this the sort of thing taking so long? And it doesn't have to be prosecuted as a big thing. You're more familiar, I'm sure, with the investigation I am. Have you inquired why it's not been broken up and smaller components being prosecuted just to get somewhere with it? Thank you.
Let me deal with the question of questions posed by the Honourable Member just asked. The question of legal specialists. Jim, the specialists that we want are those who would lead the investigations, and it would be more for the purposes of gathering evidence. If you want evidence to be gathered with a lawyer's arm. So in direct answer to questions, there isn't an intention for us to prosecute ourselves. Those will be always referred as required by the Act to the prosecuting authorities. But obviously what we need to do, because it must be seen, the fight against corruption must be seen as a continuum, that whatever information we get is given to the prosecuting authority, and whatever assistance they want is given to them by the SIU, which is the way we operate at the moment. The legal specialists we are looking for, generally speaking, would be more civil and labour-oriented. Obviously, those with criminal experience would assist as well. But the idea is not for us to do prosecution. Mr. Chairman, as far as the results of what our investigations have exposed, I accept that I think this committee is entitled to be given on an annual basis or even 6 monthly what the results are, and to that extent our report doesn't address that, and we will do so in a few days. The ACTT term is a multi-agency grouping of persons. It's the anti-corruption task team. It doesn't have a corporate entity. The SIU, the Hawks, the police, SARS, the AFU, all form it. We're linked with them in terms of our report because we provide funding for them. And as a result, when they make appointments, we had to pay, and the Auditor General finds that those appointments are probably irregular, if you flip in our book. So that is the concern. But we have no intention of leaving the ACTT. It would be just to address this particular issue. Four questions, Chairman, is a question that perhaps I should answer in a general fashion first, and then come to the subject itself. Unfortunately, prior to October 2012, the SIU lived up to its name of being an investigating unit, and that's all it did. So, for example, if it found that a crime had been committed, it gave documents to the police. If it found that misconduct had been committed by an employee, it gave documents to the head of the department. It filed its report, and that was it. There were no follow-ups, or very few follow-ups. Since 2012, the changes that were introduced, we now had to become more results-driven. And therefore, we now say to the department concerned, please tell us what the outcome is. So, again, the observation made by the Honourable Member is absolutely correct. You ought to know what it is. Unfortunately, up to last year, we didn't keep tab of those things. And as a result, I'm not in a position to tell you. I think it's going to be a massive task to gather that information. But that is now central to what is contained in our reports to the President and to the, our reports to this committee in regard to investigations that we are conducting in terms of new dispensation. As far as the SASA itself goes, Mr. Chairman, it is a bit of a historical anomaly in the sense that what one had is individuals who were being prosecuted or being made to pay back for welfare benefits to which they were not entitled and to which they unlawfully which they unlawfully acquired by whatever means, more often than not criminal. We are in the process of closing our investigation on SASA. And again, Mr. Chairman, save for those matters that we ourselves have been involved in prosecuting with the assistance of the prosecuting authorities, we can't give figures on account of the fact that this predates October 2012. As regards to we should close it, that is quite correct, and what we will do is we will finalize the report. But there is one point that I want to make, and I was hoping that Mr. Swart would be here, because on the previous occasion he raised a concern that we had dropped our targets. What our approach to the SASA investigation is this, that we are going to give all the information to the Department of Social Development, and they will take this matter to the prosecuting authorities, do their misconduct inquiries, because still I have to say that whilst it may initially have been a viable project for the SIU to be involved in, it's difficult for me now to justify the use of experienced investigators in matters that are quite simple to work out. And so our arrangement with the different social development departments is we will collect whatever we have and hand it over to you for you to take the necessary action.
Thanks, Chairman. Maybe let me start by welcoming the report. But, you know, just out of interest, I wanted to check the role of organized labor in the makeup of SIU, the engagements that might be happening. Just
the majority union, and there are, as I understand it, two unions, but the one that is recognized is Nihau, and Solidarity has a presence. Now, Mr. Chairman, as with most labor organizations, they want to determine the direction of the unit, the direction that the SIU should take, the investigations to be done, and so on. And that's always a tension that exists between management and unions. Unfortunately, it exists in the SIU itself as well. But one needs to understand that our role, we're not a government agency. We're a special investigating unit intended, Mr. Chairman, as a standard for the last 18 years to investigate specific matters. And the Act makes it clear that it is the head of the unit who would determine the manner of how investigations are done. That is not an easy position to occupy. And of course, unions do challenge that, and they, wherever there are differences, they would take them to the appropriate forums. But it's matters that I cannot concede to where an investigation is determined by a union or the manner in which investigations are done is determined by employees when they don't have the statutory obligation to fulfill those requirements.
Now, I think we must really commend you and the manner in which you work, because you really assist us to account to the public. We sit here, we know the number of proclamations which were issued. We know the number of reports which you submitted, and we take the question of public works. We know precisely what steps are taken against whom and so on. So it doesn't leave any doubt in any person's mind. And even the public outside there, I think, would admire this and feel that all of us have this kind of responsibilities, which should work in this way. Because it doesn't leave questions hanging, and then people start coming with the perceptions that there is corruption, and everybody, including the investigating officers, are corrupt when there's no such corruption. So we hope that you will continue this good work that you are doing. I think Honorable Majaka has indicated that, you know, when you want to do a clean audit, it doesn't necessarily mean that there's something wrong, because some of the things are procurements, irregularities, which do not mean that any money got lost anywhere and so on. But I think we need to encourage you to improve on that side. But on the whole, you have done very, very well and maintained standard. Honorable.
My last comment would be, okay, so do you think the SIU is actually making a difference in terms of dealing with corruption in South Africa? Are we making any impact, and why do you think so? And also, remember, previously when you were here, we talked about foreign families or donors. If you can just indicate who are your current donors, not foreign internal.
We need foreign donors.
Let me deal with the first issue first, namely donors. We receive, as I've indicated, our funds from the charges we charge statutory departments for doing investigations. In terms of the Act, we're entitled to do that. And government makes up, the central government makes up the shortfall for that. At the moment, it's about one-third to two-thirds. One-third of what we collect in terms of fees, and the two-thirds is from grants that we receive from government. As I've indicated, we want to be able to be self-sufficient in that regard. And we believe we can be, and that will lead to the just to finish that part, Honourable Member. We don't receive money, and we've never received money from any outside source, foreign or local. It would only be from the state.
my rights to you no longer receive funding. No longer.
I'm corrected, Honourable Member. I was not aware of it, but clearly before my time that person should be in position. But you can accept now the position is that we're entirely dependent on government either for grants or for the work we do for different departments. As to whether the SIU is making a difference, let me put it to you this way. When one goes out into the public, you go to conferences, you go wherever, there is this perception that there is a corrupt society out there, that our public service is entirely corrupt. But the point we've made today, that there is a very big difference between irregular spending, fruitless and wasteful expenditure, and corruption and maladministration. Now, for example, to say irregular spending constitutes maladministration, misuse the word maladministration. I'm pleased I've got a chance to place that on the record. Because maladministration means there's something wrong at the core. An irregular expenditure is, you should have done it in this way, you did it in that way, you should have chosen tender A, you chose tender B, both of them cost the same amount of money. But we get back to the perception out there. One of the things that authors, parliament, state institutions have to do is to get the public to understand that as a democracy, we can win the fight against maladministration and corruption. But maladministration and corruption, too, are not the same. Let me give an example. Tender A ought to have got a particular tender. It goes to tender B. But both of them charge the same amount. It's only if there was a chain of benefits between the decision maker and the winner that it would be corruption. Otherwise, it simply is not applying the law as you should be applying. And what happens is that somebody has lost out, somebody who's entitled to that contract has lost out, but the state, the public has not lost. And those are the decisions we must make. I come back to, is the SIU succeeding? Obviously, the more impact we have by the results we achieve, let's say we're able to recoup most of this money from Mr. McCunya. And people know, people like Mr. McCunya would know that it doesn't pay to be the recipient of these benefits. In the same way, if we get people who committed crimes, corruption and so on, behind bars, people will know that the game is not worth canceling. So it all depends on how successful we are with the results. Now directly, under the member, let me say, we can do a great deal. We must do a great deal. We spend a lot of state resources, and we need to be out there where people fear us because of the results we achieve. Not simply because we're especially there. So, but we are getting there, and we're aware that we are not there yet. We accept that.
When I get into some villages, I see some writing from the Department of Labor, where they set out all the procedures which must be, grievance procedures which must be followed. Maybe we need something on corruption, just to explain what corruption is. Because people just run around, they pick up stories, and it's all corruption and so on. It's like we have a country that is stoning itself to death without any justification.
Yeah, so if you even in sessions of parliament, you pick up that even some of us as parliamentarians are not yet sure what the corruption is, they're serious. So we'll have to ask our experts just to define corruption and paste posters everywhere. Honorable Breton, if you want to say the last word.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Just a matter of interest, if I may ask you anything further. You said that proclamations in respect of investigations finalized in previous financial year, but which the initial report was submitted in 2013-2014, it was settled. 21 of them submitted on the 30th of April, and 6 were submitted on the 31st of May. Is there any reason for the great rush at sort of that time of the year, or is it a particularly productive time? What is the significance of that?
Honourable Member, I cannot give you an explanation because I wasn't there at the time. I'm joining the toad.
Honourable Member, yes, there was a special project to conclude final reports to the President. It was a matter that was not receiving the attention it should have in the past. The reporting was done to the departments themselves. Reports were handed to the departments themselves and implemented at the departmental level. But there were a number of outstanding reports to the Presidency. So there was a special project embarked upon to conclude those outstanding reports, and there a large number of them were then completed at the same time, more or less the same time, and then submitted to the President.
Honourable Rettenbach, so judge them on what they are doing now. Okay, I will not close on that.
Before I close, Chair, just to support the notion that maybe we need some kind of a charter for corruption. So that you know, we need that the public some kind of a guide as to what corruption is, how we deal with corruption, so that we stop seeing the strong corruption. Because we need to come to a situation in South Africa where we know when you say that somebody is corrupt, what you should do. So that it shouldn't be something that is in the air, because we were actually talking to NPA about this morning, because their efforts themselves do not actually demonstrate the level of the high corruption that is actually spoken of in South Africa. So we ask ourselves, do we have corruption or we don't have corruption? If we have corruption, we have machinery that can deal with corruption or not. And we have to come to some kind of conclusion as to whether there is the corruption that we are running after, but nobody seems to catch it. And if there's no corruption, maybe we need to come to a situation where we actually even help the entire international community to understand that South Africa doesn't have the level of corruption that is actually being spoken of every day, because it actually disadvantages us, the country, to be having all of these negative assumptions about corruption when it does not exist. Thank you, Chair.
You say you also have all kinds of anonymous or concerned people sending documents to Parliament, accusing people for corruption. So if you don't agree with them or they don't get what they want, then you are corrupt. And next thing, this type of thing gets into the newspapers, and people's names are dragged into the mud, maybe because people don't know what corruption is. So I think we must really push for a charter on corruption so that we can stop all these things. Thank you. Thank you very much, Advocate Sonny and your team. I think we are happy with your report, and the comments and recommendations of the members were very constructive. I think they will help you to go on and strengthen your work. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, on behalf of my team and the SIU as a whole, may I take this opportunity of thanking you and your honourable committee members for the attention to detail that you have displayed, and of course for comments and the guidance that you give us. We believe our democracy will be the better for these exchanges.
Thank you.